Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the FC 90 podcast. I'm here, Jack Savills, your host this week in the absence of Christy Mallion and James Jones, both for very good reasons. And we're going to talk about Everton's manager hunt today after seeing Marco Silva sacked and Duncan Ferguson hugging various ball boys on his debut at Goodison Park. We're also going to move on and talk about Steve Bruce and the amazing job he's doing there. Is Newcastle the surprise package of the season, or are Leicester and Brighton worthy candidates for that as well? Then we're going to move on and have an EFL roundup from another debutant in the FC 90 podcast. And then we'll finish off with some any other business as usual. So hello and welcome. I'm joined here by our regular guest, Matt Dawson.
Pleasure to be back. Nice little intro, Jack.
Oh, thanks, Matt.
First hot seat.
Yeah, debut. Yeah, I've been dropped in at the deep end this week. James Jones has had a baby, which is quite good news.
He has a very valid excuse not to be here.
No better excuse, I would say. Christy Mallion, on the other hand, has apparently caught the Lurgies, which, from what I gather, is a fictitious disease.
Man flu, I've heard.
Man flu, yeah. So, without Christy here, we've brought in Ned Holmes.
Well, yeah, thanks for calling me in. Hopefully sort of make a Marcus Rashford-esque debut amongst an injury crisis.
Well, that's what we're all hoping for. Yeah, George Douglas as well, our usual EFL correspondent, also got the Lurgy. So we're stripped down to our bare bones. This team sort of resembles maybe Liverpool's under-18 squad that's going to face Aston Villa in the League Cup next week, I think it is.
I think it is, yeah.
Matt Dawson sporting the top knot.
Sporting the Harvey Elliott top knot.
Wow. So it's going to be an interesting one. The main talking point this week is Everton and their manager hunt, which has been a very bizarre sort of turn of events. One day you've got David Moyes being touted for the job, and then you wake up this morning, Carlo Ancelotti's been sacked as the manager of Napoli, and apparently he's in talks for the Everton job. What do we make of what's going on at Goodison Park and this sort of huge gulf in class between the manager targets that are being touted?
I think it probably sums up Everton as a whole, to be honest. A bit topsy-turvy. You don't really ever know what's going on too much. I think the weird thing about their performance against Chelsea, I always find it weird how a team 1 minute under one manager are just absolutely flat. Duncan Ferguson walks through the door and all of a sudden they're playing some of the best football they've played all season. But yeah, in terms of sort of the Carlo Ancelotti, Unai Emery links type of managers they should be going after, whether or not they've kind of got the wage pool to actually do it is another question.
Does Ferguson not potentially deserve a few weeks to potentially show what he can do after what we saw at the weekend?
I think so, but if you've got someone like Ancelotti there then and he's available, I think you've just got to pounce as quickly as possible.
I'm pretty amazed, to be honest, to, you know, when did Everton become the sort of club and what have we seen from Everton over the last few years and their sort of ownership that says they're the sort of club that are able to get Ancelotti, get Emery if you can, but I'm pretty amazed that they're even in the conversation. I think Ferguson has obviously gone in there and instilled a bit of that fear that, you know, players like Jimmy Bullard used to have of sort of him. But with something like that, you always just think, how long can it last? He doesn't seem to be a tactical genius.
No, far from it. Duncan Ferguson though, Ned, would you, after seeing him hug various ball boys, do you think he's the sort of man that could bring the passion back to Everton? Because they're one of those clubs that seem to, you know, be sitting on the precipice of success, but at the same time the life seems to get sucked out of them with each of these managerial appointments.
Yeah, and I think there's maybe something to be said about reconnecting the fans to the club. I know I remember with Ronald Koeman that was always a big issue. I know a lot of Everton fans said they felt he never really connected with the club's history, and maybe Marco Silva didn't do that either. I guess everyone is really looking for that. Frank Lampard's had so much, started to have success. Everyone's looking for their own one of them. Solskjaer, similar thing. Lundberg at Arsenal, it seems to be sort of the trend at the moment, bringing in your ex-players to sort of steady the ship.
Yeah, that's same with Arsenal as well, isn't it, Matt? You've also got Vieira and Arteta sort of as candidates as well.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I think I'm not a massive advocate of Vieira and Arteta coming in. I think maybe a little bit sort of wary of what's happened to Solskjaer and things like that. Obviously, you can't be blinded by one managerial appointment, but in terms of Ferguson, yeah, he's had one game, it's gone very well. Obviously that connection with the fans is important, but at the end of the day, result, it's a results business. So
yeah,
I think Ancelotti could be someone that, that does deliver that.
For sure. There's a lot of big figures at Everton who behind the scenes sort of play a big role. So we've got Bill Kenwright, Mashiri, obviously the owner, and then Marcel Brands. With all these various reports going around about the manager they're interested in, do you think that perhaps you've got Brands there pushing for the likes of Ancelotti and Pochettino, and then Bill Kenwright being the sort of nostalgic, you know, slightly old man, if that's not offensive to say, wants to go back to a former glory day under David Moyes? Do you think there's probably a clash of interest there at board level about who they want to bring in?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from what I read, it was, you know, Kenwright wanted David Moyes back, and Mashiri was sort of more after the kind of more cultural managers, if you like, managers from afar.
Think David Moyes is a cultured man?
No, I don't really.
Don't think many at the stadium of like would agree with that statement.
it's definitely sort of too many cooks, I think, in terms of Everton. I think it's a little bit like that at Arsenal as well. You've got San Lehi and then Vinay Venkatesham as well, who's involved, and the Cronkies as well. It's like, how many people do you actually need? Surely it should be one figurehead making the main calls, and at the end of the day, the manager is the biggest decision to make in terms of the football club.
And a lot of these figures seem to escape fairly unscathed from a lot of poor results on the field as well, minus a few voices on Twitter in the echo chamber, you know, calling them out on things. But, you know, at Everton, I think Silva did get a little bit hung out to dry. Read a report that he's wanted Kurt Zouma as his number one priority target, and he also wanted an experienced striker. And in the end, they didn't sign a centre-back, and they got Moise Keenan, who's clearly not matching that description. So yeah, at some point these figures have to be held accountable.
Yeah, I mean, their recruitment for a while has been questionable, hasn't it? Whether it's been managerial or on the field. I know they've signed some good players. Richarlison's obviously standout, Sigurdsson, but then you've got players like Iwobi coming in for £35 million, wherever it was. So yeah, I think there needs to be not necessarily an overhaul at board level, but someone needs to actually sort of take charge rather than sort of three or four men all at the helm.
Yeah, you wonder maybe if someone like an Ancelotti comes in, that whether he's able to have more with his stature in the game, whether he's able to have more of an impact than say Silva was able to have on getting in who he wants to bring in, or just really getting it more settled the club than it is now, because as Matt was saying, it seems to have been for the last few summers, it's there doesn't seem to be an extended plan. It's just right, how can we spend £150 million this summer,
and which top clubs are selling players,
exactly, and amazingly that doesn't lead to a great squad. I mean, obviously that squad should be performing a lot better than it is, because they've got some good players, but it's not exactly the recipe for success.
Throughout this whole Everton manager saga as well, I've noticed it's kind of been running parallel to Arsenal, so similar targets on the agenda. Emery's obviously been linked with the Everton job. So if Everton do end up getting Moyes in, Wenger in?
Why not? Why not? Can't be worse than Emery, can
just
it?
Get Ferguson back in and we can all just pretend it's 10 years ago.
Let's do it. Mourinho back at Chelsea as well. Yeah, can't wait. No, in terms of Arsenal's appointments, I really don't have a clue who it's going to be. Pochettino is probably my main pick, Nagelsmann, but yeah, from what I'm seeing, it's not too hopeful managerial wise. So,
do you think this might be covered before? But do you think Pochettino would take it?
Probably not. Yeah. That's the main sticking point.
Yeah,
but yeah, I can dream.
Yeah,
Arsenal fans can dream.
Pochettino's turned his nose up at the Everton job. Perhaps a little unsurprisingly from what we hear, but it'd be very exciting if he went to Arsenal.
It's also a funny thing to think, sort of, what becomes of Marco Silva now? You know, he seemed at Watford, there was a lot of big talk about him being the next manager through to the big clubs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it hasn't worked for him at Everton, as it hasn't for other people. You know, it started to go downhill at Watford. I guess it's going to be really interesting to see where his value lies now.
Yeah, well, another manager who's perhaps defied expectation this season is Mr. Steve Bruce, or the English Mourinho, if you speak to various Newcastle fans, I'm sure. He's taken Newcastle to 22 points from 16 games. So theoretically 18 points away from survival already. Draw with Manchester City, win away at Tottenham Hotspur, win at home to Man United. Clearly doing very well. How do you sort of assess their season so far? Do you think that perhaps they've just got a bit lucky, or do you think that Bruce deserves a lot of credit for what he's managed to achieve?
I think they've gone very, very under the radar. Not until sort of the past week have they really started to turn heads and have people talking. I think they've only lost one in their last seven. And meanwhile, they played the most boring football I think I've ever seen. I read a stat last week that said, I think the average possession they've had this season is 37%, which is pretty remarkable, to be honest. But, I mean, it's working for Steve Bruce, and the stats don't lie. He is doing a better job than Rafa Benitez was this time last season. So you can't get much better than that.
Yeah, nine points better off and four goals better off than they were at this time last season. Is he merely sort of capitalising on the foundations that Benitez laid for him? Do you think that he sort of Benitez put a blueprint in place, which he's kind of just continued? Or do you think that Bruce has his own identity, Bruce Ball, as you might want to call it? And do you think that, yeah, he deserves credit for that? Or Benitez has laid the foundations?
I think it's a difficult one to say, really. I mean, I think you've probably got to give them both a bit of credit. I don't think anyone really expected it seemed like a very, very questionable appointment.
They were pretty much nailed on to get relegated when it was.
Yeah.
When
one of their players, announced. When he came in, did an interview and he was like, kind of, who is this? Why is he? Yeah. We've gone from Rafa Benitez to Steve Bruce. Kind of, why has this happened? So, yeah, it is a bit of a strange situation.
It's an interesting one as well. You know, to see them do so well without really a striker firing at all. You know, Joe Linton hasn't yet been the, what was it, 30, 40 million pound pair that they bought
million,
in.
I think. Yeah.
Dwight Gale seems nailed on to be going back to the Championship in January. Andy Carroll, dribs and drabs, but less sort of, you know, not so much goal threat as much as link-up play. So it could be interesting to see, you know, how well they could do it if, say, Joe Linton went to form or they brought someone else in January.
Yeah, I think it could be quite a, not necessarily a scary prospect, but if Joe Linton does eventually start firing, then I think there'll be a bit of a team to be reckoned with, and St James's Park could be quite a difficult place to go with. I mean, it's still largely Benitez's team, apart from Joe Linton and St Maximin. I mean, St Maximin has been very good, but yeah, apart from that, he has just picked up the foundations, but seems to have picked up on a style that actually suits those players well. So
yeah, well, I think there's similarities to be drawn. I mean, you mentioned St Maximin there. It seems to me that Newcastle's entire approach is, if we can get it to St Maximin and he can run at someone, then we have a chance. Under Benitez, it was, if we can get the ball to Rondon in a particular position, he can hold it up, we have a chance. The difference is that Rondon had Jose Perez playing off him, whereas with Newcastle, aside from the recent upsurge in Shelby's form, don't really see who else is offering anything apart from St Maximin. But I mean, it's working for them.
Yeah, probably one of the most frustrating players has been Almiron as well, signed for what, club record fee at the time last January, and he's contributed to one goal in almost a year's worth of football. Just a little bit,
which was an assist against Man City.
It was. Must have been delighted.
Yeah, always.
You sort of feel for the guy as well. Like, it seemed he's become something of a not a laughing stock, maybe, but almost every touch is sort of, every touch near the box is sort of analysed, because he's gone from a player where I didn't watch a lot of sort of MLS or anything, but he seemed to be a player that really, you know, was so technically talented, and now he can hardly take the ball, basically.
Yeah, it seems to be a confidence thing.
Yeah, definitely. So you'd sort of hope for them, maybe if Joe Linton gets far in, then they could be, you know, they could be a really decent prospect. Mm.
And Mike Ashley took so much criticism when he got in Steve Bruce. And now we're learning that he's giving away half-season tickets from January onwards.
From, I think, 28th of December, their game against Everton, I think it is, or Boxing Day fixture, whatever it is.
And he's giving away 10,000 free half-season tickets.
Yeah.
And Mike Ashley, you know, the overlord that he is, apparently still can't impress Newcastle fans, even with such a grand gesture, giving away free season tickets.
It's hard to know where your moral compass is when Mike Ashley is giving away 10,000 free season tickets.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's better than dishing out free Sports Direct mugs, isn't it? On arrival.
I mean, I would happily take one. They are handy.
Do you happily take a mug over a Newcastle game for free?
Yeah, probably. I mean, so it's a long way to go to Newcastle from here, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, and the football wouldn't be too great, so you'd probably get more use out of a giant mug.
Plenty.
More
plenty
joy, I'm sure.
But with Newcastle and the situation they're in, do we see them perhaps strengthening in January as well? I mean, obviously they have got points on the board, but you know there are clearly gaps in that team that need to be filled, and a couple of injuries, and they could be, you know, in really dire straits.
Yeah, I think the only rumour I've really seen is Jared Bowen, but he seems to be linked with every man and his dog at the moment.
Yeah.
So if they can get him, I think he's a player that could do pretty well in the Premier League. Whether or not they actually need another sort of attacking player is another question. I think there's sort of other priorities there, but yeah.
Bowen, an interesting prospect, because you know we're talking about St Maximin sort of giving him the ball and letting him run at people, and that's sort of been a lot of Hull's tactic with Bowen this season. So it could be a sort of a dangerous duo if Newcastle do manage to get that done. I do think they need to strengthen. You know, we saw in the humble sort of the defeat at Leicester and some other performances that, you know, if the wheels come off, they could come off, and they're not safe yet. So you don't really want to sort of just
don't want to leave it to chance for sure. You know? Yeah, obviously with Newcastle doing so well, they could potentially be named the surprise package of the season. Also worthy shout outs to Leicester, Sheffield United, and Brighton. I would say, who takes your pick this season for, you know, the team that surprised you the most?
I think probably Sheffield United. Didn't really strengthen over the summer, but they signed Lys Mousset, who has turned into Lionel Messi, it seems, out of nowhere. But yeah, no, massively impressive with Sheffield United. Regimented team, tough to break down. Got the foundations in place. Chris Wilder's doing a pretty good job. So yeah, I mean, I can't really see them going down. So that's where I thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. So yeah.
Yeah, I have to go with Sheffield United as well. Job Chris Wilder's done. With, you know, he's got players in there that were playing in League One with Sheffield United, and you know they did sort of what I found sort of their transfer strategy quite funny in the summer, because they just seemed to be saying, who are the best players we played against last season? Who can we nick from other championship clubs and swoop for sort of Callum Robinson, Ollie McBurney, Ben Osborne, people like that, and yet they've, you know, people said. I wasn't sure how they'd do, and here they are taking the game to sort of everyone and often having a lot of success.
Ravel Morrison, no sign of him. What's the story there? Is he?
Oh, it's a shame, isn't it?
I forgot he was there. That's a shame.
I mean, that's it. He's only played a handful of minutes, if that. I think might have come on as a sub a couple of times. But
just about sums up his career by the sounds of it.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing with Leicester is obviously they're flying, but. There was a lot of talk about them sort of pre-season. I think they're outdoing where I expected them to be, but not by the amount that Sheffield United are. And so that's why I think for me, Sheffield United just pip it.
Sweet. Cheers, guys. I think we'll move on to Ned's EFL roundup now in just a moment. And welcome back to the FC United podcast. We're going to go over to Mr. Ned Holmes in the absence of George Douglas to give us a rundown on all things EFL. We like to say we slalom down the footballing pyramid, Ned. That seems to be
the phrase.
Okay.
The phrase.
Well, I'll see if I can sort of do justice to Dags.
Yeah, weave it in
seat,
out.
Really, it's an honour. I guess a huge night last night for Leeds, who, after a sort of tight first half against Hull, came away 2-0 victors, and Fulham and Bristol City in third and fourth both slipped up. So I think that's an 11-point gap now that the Leeds have on third. You know, they're looking increasingly more safe in those automatic promotion places. Dare I say it? Obviously, Leeds fans won't be happy yet. Mm. That's 7 wins in a row for them. If West Brom win tonight, even, I think that's 7 for them as well. It's starting to look like that is a two-horse race for the two places, really, in the Championship. But beyond that, we've got 10 teams within 5 points of each other, all sort of battling for the top six. So, you know, it's looking like that really we're going to have the race for the top six and the race for the Championship, really.
Mm. How do you rate Bristol City's chances of finishing in one of those promotion places?
I think there's a in a lot of ways we've flattered to deceive this season. You know, last night was a sort of classic. When we've come up against big teams, we've seemed to be able to hold our weight other than Leeds. But last night was, you know, it was the same as it was against Luton, as against Barnsley, you know, against Wigan. We seem to have off nights, and I don't think you can have that many off nights and really be up there, really. I mean, I think it's going to be a huge January for us. People talk a lot about strikers, but we need to shore up that back line. We've conceded so many goals. I saw a stat last week that was sort of we've conceded the most shots, and
yeah,
there's a lot that needs to change. As happy as I am with the way the season's gone,
it's a good position to be in at this stage.
So moving on to that, then, you know, Sheffield Wednesday. A lot of talk about them facing a potential point deduction. Obviously, they sold their stadium to their owner, and they were charged with financial misconduct, but they've now come back saying that they were given permission by an EFL figure and they're threatening to bring their own action. So it's all quite up in the air. I've read a report, I think the Athletic were saying it could be, a lot of clubs are thinking they're going to get a 21-point deduction.
21 points.
I think they'd probably be about safe the way that they're playing, but it would be obviously their playoffs out the window.
Yeah, and that's what, and that is, that did Birmingham get 12 points, was it, last season? So yeah, that'd be the biggest point deduction in EFL history.
Well, I wouldn't gamble on that, but a big one at the very least. Moving, sort of staying in Yorkshire, I guess, there's a bit of talk about Barnsley's breakup with Daniel Stendel. When he got sacked, I thought it was a bit harsh, given they sold a lot of their more experienced players in the summer, and then they sort of announced the news in a strange statement that was only one paragraph long, and it seemed really disrespectful. They've come out in the last few days and revealed that he was in talks to take over at another championship club. Must have really been Huddersfield or Wednesday, you'd imagine, with which jobs are open. And he didn't discuss anything with the club, and basically that they felt, you know, destabilised the club, and that led to his sacking. And they've been trying to sort things out with him off, sort of behind closed doors. It hasn't worked yet. He's now been announced at Hearts. So they've said sort of the club will continue to vigorously defend its rights, and said that all recovered damages will be reinvested in the squad. So you never know, it could be a big boost for Barnsley. Moving down to League One, it's just continued misery really for Sunderland. They've now lost an 89th minute winner against Gillingham on Saturday. They've now lost 7 of 12 under Parkinson, been knocked out of 3 competitions, slipped down to 11th in the table. They're 10 points from the top 2. They are only 5 points from the top 6. But you know, the Sunderland fans that I speak to, who at first wanted to give him the January window, now I don't think they feel like they can trust him. That seems to be the state of it. Going to be interesting to see what the club do, whether they back him.
Would the documentary this season be even more entertaining, stroke miserable than the first one? It just seems to just keep getting worse and worse.
If only the cameras were still rolling.
Yeah. Maybe they are. They've re-entered the building.
And sort of moving further down into League Two, I think the interesting story at the moment is the continued success of the South West teams. Obviously, it is the third, fourth tier of English football, but you'd probably say the South West's the least successful region in English football.
Yeah.
You know, Bristol City, is that the highest team?
Cardiff. Seems like a slight humble brag there, Manoj.
You know, Swindon are top with 5 leagues in a row, followed by Exeter, Forest Green and Cheltenham making the top 4. So it's just an interesting thing to see there, really. You know, you don't see many South West teams, so maybe we could be seeing 3 in League One next year.
Good stuff. Cheers for that, Ned. Anything to add, Matt, from your former Leeds United days?
I mean, apart from the fact that it would be very funny if Leeds bottle it from this point. Not too much. I mean, yeah, if Leeds fail to go up this season, then, I mean, there really is no hope for them.
Yeah.
You've got Bielsa there, 11 points clear of third place. West Brom and Leeds seem to be the two main candidates for promotion. So yeah, I'd be very surprised if they don't go up.
The only small thing that worries me about Leeds is looking at their squad. How on earth would they survive in the Premier League? They seem very down to bare bones as it is.
Yeah, I think interestingly with the squad is that the last two games, we've seen Pascal Struett and Ollie Casey be given debuts by Bielsa. So it looks like potentially he's considering whether he's going to need to rotate more at the end of the season after sort of late season slump last year. But as Matt was saying, I think if the wheels come off now, it's going to set them back so far in terms of Bielsa is not going to stay for another season in the Championship. No. You can't see Calvin Phillips staying another season in the Championship. No. Ben White is not going to be there. How big... It's really, this is their season, which is not something you'd think many Leeds fans would want to hear.
Sure, it's now or never for Leeds. We're going to take a quick break there as well, and we'll be back in a moment with any other business. Welcome back to the FC United podcast. We're just going to finish off this week's episode with any of the business, where we just basically round up a few things from the footballing world that are worth noting. I'm going to go straight in and mention that it's the M23 derby on Monday night, which is that infamous or
classic derby
between Crystal Palace and Brighton, which will be Graham Potter's first time entering the cauldron of an atmosphere, which I'm sure it'll be at Selhurst Park. Any thoughts on this game or the derby as a concept?
I mean, in all seriousness, it should actually be quite a decent game. I think Brighton and Palace are doing quite well this season, so it could be quite a close affair. Not really sure which way to call it, but as a concept, the M23 derby does sound a little bit stupid. Doesn't really send shivers through my through my spine, but there we go.
The Holmesdale fanatics will be there, probably flares in hands, ready to have it, so it should make for an interesting spectacle. Anyone else got anything they'd like to offer up this week?
Yeah, I'll throw out an Arsenal stat, which actually amazed me when I saw this in the week. The win over West Ham on Monday night was the first time that Arsenal have won an away from home when training at half-time in 8 years. The last time they did that was a 5-3 win over Chelsea in 2011.
Wow, that is really quite damning, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. On that day, Andre Santos scored. So maybe getting rid of him was where the problem started.
That's the beginning, the catalyst for Arsenal's misery.
Yeah, I might write an article on that, actually.
Yeah.
Whack it out this week.
I mean, what does that say about what the next Arsenal manager needs to do? He needs to...
Well, improve away form.
Improve away form. Yeah. And, yeah, make sure you've got the metal to turn it around if you go behind.
Absolutely. And then I'll throw another pretty amazing stat at you. David Nugent scored his first goal for Preston for 4,623 days this week. I mean, the last time he was at Preston was 2007, so there has been a break.
Okay. Yeah. That's what you've done us there with the big number.
But yeah, I mean, a nice little niche stat for you.
Still sounds like a lot of days to not score for one team. So
it is.
Fair play, David Nugent.
Reminds me of my sort of goal scoring form.
Even on the five-a-side pitches.
Oh, mate. Such small goals.
If it was in big nets, though, then be a different story.
Yeah. I just sort of weighed in one with it being general election week. You know, sort of Ben Osborne sort of weighed in on politics. I guess not something we really see football players do. You see a lot of celebrities doing it, and I guess just wanted to gauge your guys' thoughts on whether you'd like to see them float their opinions more, or do you think it's a, sort of a good stance to sort of stay out of it?
What did Osborne actually say?
So he was replying to a stat which was basically showing that since the Tories came in 2011, there's I think there was one food bank, I don't know, but basically there is now more food banks than there are McDonald's in the UK, as the rate that they've grown. And he basically said, you know, if you just have to walk around your city centre, you can see the country's on its arse. We need to change things. Vote for the least worst party. Talking about the Labour Party, which I think sums up our politics pretty well. But just a sort of funny thing to see, because, you know, you don't really hear ever from them. And I'd be interested to know who's voting where. Without wanting to make any suggestions. We all know where Patrick Bamford's voting, but...
I mean, footballers are just told to stay out of it, really, aren't they? Which is probably quite wise.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had somebody coming out saying that I'm a staunch supporter of UKIP, it might raise a few questions. But, probably one of the most... I mean, he's an ex-footballer, but Gary Lineker does like to stick his neck out on the line, doesn't he, with stuff like that. So, I mean, I, don't really have a say on whether footballers want to get involved. If they do, then fair enough.
It seems to be something that's swelling a bit, especially with, you know, the Gary Neville and also the Forest Green chairman or owner. They both in the last week have sort of talked about racism and the how they feel it's directly related to the current government's stance on not being anti-racist enough. It seems to be something that, I guess, maybe through the growth of social media and Twitter that it's becoming a talking point.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a world where there's such a growing gulf between, you know, the rich and poor, football almost kind of embodies that, doesn't it? Yeah. With all the super rich owners coming in, the fans being priced out of the game. So, I mean, footballers should be speaking about it. I mean, everyone has a right to voice their opinion. I think they're people who can have a genuine influence. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just one final quick point. I think the election will have quite a big say on football, Brexit especially.
Mm.
What are the rules going to be of work permits? How many foreign players can you have in your squad? Stuff like that. So, yeah, it will be quite interesting to see once that does actually finally happen, if it does, of course.
Could be a game changer, for sure. And one thing which I managed to forget to do this week was present a stat to you boys at the start of the episode, something we normally do, Ned, and then as the episode progresses, let you think about the answer, and then at the end you can answer the question, but I have to give it to you now instead. So Ansu Fati became the youngest ever goal scorer in the Champions League last night. Fine finish against Inter Milan. Any of you see it?
I did, yeah.
I heard he was also the first player born after the release of the of GTA Vice City in the Champions League.
Well, that is the stat that I should have gone with.
That's the stat to go, yeah.
he was 17 years, 40 days old on the night. The previous record holder actually broke it in 1997. Peter Ofori Quay, I think is how he pronounced his name, 17 years, 195 days old, scored for Olympiacos against Rosenborg in a 5-1 defeat. He went on to play 30 times in the Champions League as a Ghanaian striker. I think most of his appearances in the Champions League with Olympiacos. But how many goals did he manage to score in those 30 games?
I'm going to go with one. And that was the only goal he ever scored. Mm. That's what I'm going
to go with seven. I've got a bit of confidence in him. I think, you know.
I think, yeah, Matt's the winner. The closest, just about. He scored three times.
Oh, that's a tight one.
Not a particularly amazing career. 40 goals in 159 games in the Greek Super League. 29-131 for Olympiacos. So, you know, I think someone who scored at that age, that sort of promise would go on to huge things, but wasn't to be. I think Ansu Fati maybe
a different to Ansu Fati, yeah. Really, isn't it?
Will he be the next Peter Ofori?
I know he's a regular lister.
Yeah, unlucky Ansu. All right, cheers, guys. That wraps up this week's episode of the FC United podcast. If you like what we do, please subscribe on all your podcast platforms. Like us on Twitter and give us a shout out if you fancy. And yeah, guess we'll see you next week.